You're listening to episode 132 of the Mad Chatters Podcast, April 5th, 2017.
Most everyone's mad here.
Hello there, and welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters Podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name's Derek, and joining me today, as always, are my fellow co-hosts, Matthew.
Mahalo.
And Jeremy.
A ring of fire.
Does mahalo mean thank you?
Mahalo is like a greeting.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. A ring of fire because my hemorrhoids are flaring up.
I figured that one. That was pretty obvious. All right, well, before we announce the winner of the Munch Madness Tournament, which we will do, and before we get into other fun things, I've got a couple news items I want to talk about with you guys. The first I want to mention briefly because it happened over in Disneyland, and I wanted to get your take. So this weekend, someone was online and noticed that as they were scrolling through the days of what's going on the rest of the summer, they noticed that the Main Street Electrical Parade was showing up on the calendar all the way through August when it's supposed to be over in June. You know, this whole limited time, quote unquote, sounds familiar, doesn't it?
I'm having flashbacks, to like 2010 or whatever that was.
Yeah. Yep. So they kind of dig deeper and they got someone from Disney to respond and say, that's just a mistake. It's not supposed to say that. The app is wrong. So after everyone blew up on Twitter saying, what? It's staying longer. Then they were like, oh, okay. It's just a mistake. Just a few hours later, the official Disney blog and Twitter tweeted out, Main Street Electrical Parade staying through August 20th. So it is true. It's just 2 months so far, but it's extending its stay. So that sounds familiar to you guys?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I remember, like, because when it came to Walt Disney World, it was only supposed to be a few months. And I remember kind of freaking out because it was during a time when I was pretty busy with some things. And I thought, I'm not going to be able to make it within those couple months. I'm not going to be able to get a trip into Disney because I was living in, I guess, North Florida at the time. And, what am I going to do? I'm going to miss the Main Street Electrical Parade and it's going to be a tragedy.
No.
And little did I know.
70 years later.
I'd have plenty of opportunities to see the Main Street Electrical Parade.
Maybe even more than you would have ever wanted.
Very true.
Hands down, more than I wanted, yeah. And of course, I'm sure some people are glad, but most of the people that we follow are annual pass holders and are therefore like, no, we just want Paint the Night to come back.
Yeah.
So, I don't think Paint the Night's coming back for them. I hate to break it to them.
Yeah, there are rumors. There are mixed rumors on that topic, so.
I keep seeing that it's a pretty expensive parade to run, and
right.
I can't imagine that they... Disney is going to go for the cheaper route, and if you can still draw the crowd with Main Street Electrical Parade, then they'll go that route.
Yeah, it's a really good point. But it does, I think, tie into Walt Disney World, because I think the question still remains, maybe now that we're entering summer, maybe now more than ever, is Magic Kingdom ever going to have a nighttime parade again?
I don't know, and it's weird.
I bet.
We went Saturday night. Interesting story. Just a quick shout out to Brent Gleason, who took my wife and I out to dinner randomly Saturday night, who's a listener. And that was wonderful. And we were sitting in the restaurant at Liberty Tree, and I heard all the fireworks at 9, like 9:05, 9:10-ish. And I was like, is that the fireworks? Because it was clearly like the finale that went off. And they've been doing fireworks at 9. And then the projection show, Once Upon a Time, which I have never watched before for some reason, and it is delightful.
Yeah.
But 9:45, that happens, and then it's just like, you're done. It's just the oddest thing. Fireworks at 9 at the Magic Kingdom, it's weird.
Yeah, did it seem to clear out after that, like for the last hour?
After that projection show, because we really just went up to do that, and we ate, and we watched the projection show, and we left, and so was everybody else. So it took us like an hour to get back to the parking lot. So it was emptying out.
Okay. Because I thought maybe it was just the case because it was Super Bowl Sunday last time I was there, and they did Once Upon a Time, then they did the fireworks, but then the park was still open like an hour and a half after that, and it felt empty. And I just thought maybe like people were going home to watch the Super Bowl, but...
Well, it's kind of always been, even when they did the fireworks at 10 and the Main Street Electrical Parade at like 9 and 11, after the fireworks, it usually always cleared out, but this felt like... Everybody was leaving after the projection show on Saturday night, and it was a nightmare trying to get back to the TTC.
Yeah, it's just strange that we haven't had any sort of announcement. I feel like when Festival of Fantasy came months before, we were getting concept art of the floats and big announcements.
It might just be a logistical nightmare that they don't ever want to be part of again with that many people in the Magic Kingdom.
It's just a shame now that tickets are more expensive than ever. You kind of come to expect a parade with Disney, but oh well. Anyway, the other piece of news I want to talk about also relates to Magic Kingdom, and it relates to getting in and out. And I want to talk about these new security measures that were just introduced this week. They were introduced on Monday, and it's kind of a game changer for Magic Kingdom as far as entry goes. Instead of the bag check being right there in front of where you scan your Magic Band and your tickets and all that, they have now been moved way back. So there are a lot of them at TTC, kind of where you stood in line and waited for the tram to take you back to your car. Those are all security checkpoints now. So that way, when you get on the ferry, when you get on the monorail, you'll have already gone through bag check, and now it's not completely backed up right there by the train station. There are other bag checks right by the buses, so that when you get off the buses, it's all over there and you don't have to worry about once you get up close. There are some even at the resort, so like if you're at the Polynesian getting on the monorail, there aren't going to be bag checks at the bottom of the monorail ramp, so you need to do it before you even get on the monorail. So it's all very interesting.
Yeah.
This is interesting. It seems like there's a lot more loopholes in the system now, but that's just me.
Okay, can you name one?
Well, I mean, you have a lot more time to, if you wanted to do something devious, and insert whatever that is, you have a lot more opportunity and time now between the checkpoint and the entry to do so.
Okay. I mean, I'm not a mastermind. I just can't think of what that would be.
Well, I'm just saying, if I wanted to bring in a weapon into a Disney park, which again, why in the world would you do that? And I'm certainly not putting that out into the universe to happen, hopefully. But I'm just saying, if I had that intent, and before I would have to go through security and there was limited space between the security checkpoint and the entrance gate, if you're going to do something or make an adjustment, it had to be in that space. Now, if I wanted to do something, I could get on the monorail that's almost a mile away, and I have more opportunity to plan or to figure out something between there and the entrance gate. I'm just saying, it seems like more, the further you put out the security checks, it would appear that there would be more opportunity to do something.
Okay. I could maybe see that from a guest perspective and not like a security and having to worry about security perspective. I love this because having it right there by the entrance when there's only so much space, like you can't add any more bag checkers because that's all the space you have, and you're guaranteed to get there at the same time as every other person who rode the monorail with you. Like, it's kind of a nightmare. And at that point, you're at the front gates. It's a magical time. You're hearing the music. And you know, wait, I'm going to have to wait at least 20 minutes to go through this bag check. It's not always 20 minutes. In fact, it's usually less. But still, at the TTC, you know, everybody's arriving at different times, kind of whether they take the tram or they walk slowly or fast. You're going to be getting there at different times. It's not going to hopefully be backed up all that much. And then once you're through it, you can happily take the ferry, the monorail, and at that point, all the hard work is done. That's just my opinion.
That's true. I agree. From a guest perspective, this is much nicer. And then again, it also removes the real world away from the fantasy as well. It was always a little jarring to have to go through a baggage check right there at the entrance to the Magic Kingdom. Also, let me just put in this caveat that security checks at any Disney parks were kind of a joke to begin with. And if you really wanted to do something, you're going to find the opportunity. It's not going to stop you just because a security guard with a wooden stick happens to poke into your backpack.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't forget now they have the metal detectors, which is an added layer of security.
Everyone goes through.
Yeah.
Oh, everybody does go through the metal detectors now? I didn't realize that.
Last time I was there, that was the case. So, yeah, they're stepping it up. But now all those things, because I noticed that, like, for instance, at the Polynesian, you know, the monorails station is on the second floor, and you go through those automatic glass doors. As soon as you walk outside, there's a metal detector and a few guards right there.
Well, that's good. There's a children's hospital in St. Louis that at 8 o'clock they turn on the metal detector, and the security guard sits there and makes everybody go through. Before 8 p.m., you don't have to. And I always thought that was the strangest thing. Do people only shoot up the hospital after 8 p.m.? Is that like a...
Yeah, that's weird.
An unwritten terrorist?
I'm thinking... I don't want to be a conspiracy theory guy or anything, but a few weeks ago, we went to the Magic Kingdom, and we were waiting for the monorail. We noticed that the doors opened, and everybody exited the other side, but they weren't opening the side for us to enter yet, and it was like an unusual amount of time. Like, it was people were long gone and already down the exit ramp, and our side still wasn't opened. And I noticed, you know, just as I was like, why is it taking so long? What's going on? I saw a security guy on the other side in the open doors, and they had a bomb or drug sniffing dog going into each door, like, and looking around the thing. And then he was done, and he took the dog off, and then they opened our side. And I wonder if maybe there had been unusual something that happened that made them think, well... And, you know, come to think of it, the monorails always were kind of vulnerable. So this kind of puts another layer of security where you're not getting on the monorail or the ferry boat before you're screened with security, whereas before you could have been.
Well, that's true, but I'll just take it out one more notch and say the resorts are vulnerable, or, you know, whatever. Disney Springs is vulnerable. You're going to have to start putting in...
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is, I wonder if there was like a threat or like just rumors or some kind of inside information that made them think, this is bad, what can we do? I mean, yeah, there's only a certain amount of security you're going to be able to do anywhere, but I wonder if they went back to the drawing board and they're like, what if we put one more layer on here that protected the monorails and the mass transportation? Because those are always a target for, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's very a good true. Point. I'm really looking forward to the first time I go. And when the monorail arrives, I don't have to be thinking, okay, go and get ahead of all these people so I can beat them all to the bag check. I can just enjoy the stroll down the ramp.
Yes.
Did you guys happen to see the big reveal this week online of what's happening at Disney California Adventure?
No.
You'll have to be more specific.
Well, it was announced a few months ago that Guardians of the Galaxy, of course, will be taking over the Tower of Terror. And the scaffolding has come down and the exterior to the tower has been revealed. Did you all happen to see pictures of this?
No, I just imagine it's kind of ghastly.
It looks like a very colorful computer chip.
It looks terrible. And listen, I'm always amused by the Disney Twitterverse in particular, because there's always two reactions. There's the expected reaction of the public, and then there's the counter reaction of they just are counter reacting because that's just who they are as people, unfortunately. I don't care who you are. This is not an improvement over the Tower of Terror. It just looks terrible. Like, there's nothing aesthetically pleasing to it.
I'm gonna look it up right now. I haven't seen it yet.
There we go. We'll get Matt's reaction live on the Mad Chatters podcast.
I'm torn because I'm a huge fan of that early Hollywood structure, which I still think the Hollywood Studios facade looked better than the DCA facade. But even then, like, it still had a very early Hollywood, like, building in the real world look about it. And so I'm torn because, yeah, I do miss that. But at the same time, like, if you just take it for what it is, a Marvel attraction, it's pretty cool. Does that make sense? I just feel like if that were in a Marvel park, that would be one freaking awesome facade. It's just hard to say because it looks like absolutely nothing else in that park.
See, I don't think the facade looks that awesome, you know? Either. I think it looks kind of janky. Kind of just like they painted some bright colors and it looks like macaroni art. That's what it looks like.
It really does look like a giant hard drive to me.
Oh, there it is. There's a little snippet. It's got like a, I don't know, the bottom of it looks like some kind of weird Moroccan Indian palace, and then it turns into a...
It's got a lot going on. It kind of reminds me of a really modern, ugly version of the Tower of the Four Winds. Remember that from It's a Small World at the World's Fair?
No. Oh, really.
Yeah, the little kinetic, whatever you call it.
Like, things were spinning and moving. And
Yeah. Very busy. Yep, that's something.
Yep. Just glad it's not Hollywood Studios.
Mission yet. Breakout.
Yeah.
I don't know. When the first iteration doesn't work, make it worse, I guess. Is that Disney's thing now?
Maybe. Well, that opens May 27th, so hopefully we'll get reports that at least the attraction is, quote, hilarious.
Something else happening that day, I think, will overshadow all of that.
Probably so. And I'm very excited about that.
Yes.
Is it someone's birthday?
It's the birthday of Pandora.
Oh, Pandora. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that does it for the Disney news on both coasts. But we have some much more important news to share, and that's the winner of Munch Madness.
It's time for Munch Madness!
All right, so for the last month, you listeners have been voting on which restaurants you want to move forward in our Munch Madness tournament. We started with 64, the three of us helped narrow it down to 32, and then we put the rest in your hands. Last week we announced that the two finalists are Ohana at Polynesian Village Resort, and Boma at Animal Kingdom Lodge. And since Wednesday, you all have been placing your votes. Matt and Jeremy, I believe you do not yet know who won, correct?
That is correct.
No.
Okay, so before I reveal, do you guys want to take any guesses on who won and by how much?
I'm going to put my money on Ohana. And I'm going to say it's probably a 70-30 split.
I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to put my money on Ohana as well, but I'm going to say it's a much slimmer margin. I think that while Ohana certainly does have a fan base, I think there's also some Ohana backlash because when you are popular, there is always going to be a segment that does not like you.
It's true. I think for the three of us, for everyone who's like us and thought Be Our Guest is overrated, I think there are three others who think Ohana is overrated. And like you, Jeremy, my first thought for the people who vote for Boma was not, oh, they really love Boma. It was, they do not want Ohana to win this thing. But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. And I do love Boma, so it's hard to say. Ohana has won by at least 70% in every round so far. This time, the winner won by 64%, took 64% of the vote. And yes, you're right. It was Ohana.
Yay.
Yay.
Was there ever any doubt?
I think Ohana was always going to win no matter where we put it in the bracket.
Yeah.
Well, I think probably for next year, we should not let Ohana play. Maybe they get to enter into the Munch Madness Hall of Fame, and so they're retired now.
I like it.
Interesting. That's the way sports works.
It's the way sports should work, and then we just whittle it down where there's nothing left.
You can't win anymore if you win once.
But we still remember you as the greatest, don't worry.
Yes.
Of course, yeah. Anyway, maybe next year we'll introduce something different. But it was really fun. It was really fun getting listeners involved. We had a few people reach out and, you know, say that they were excited that their favorite made it, or that they just couldn't believe that such and such was eliminated. But anyway, Boma and Ohana, two great picks if you're visiting Walt Disney World soon. But in the end, Ohana took the Munch Madness crown. And I think that takes us nicely into our next segment, Eating Around the World.
When I was growing up going to the Disney parks, and my family and I, we'd go and we'd make reservations to eat. Back in the day when you had to call from the hotel to make reservations to eat somewhere. And we just one day tried this place called Ohana at the Polynesian Resort. Hey, it's all you can eat, family style, Polynesian. The grilled meats sounded good to my dad, so we booked it. And I remember absolutely falling in love with this place. Late at night, I think it was 9 o'clock, we had all this meat. It was the Polynesian Hawaiian music and the torches on the wall and the tiki statues and the coconut bread. And then at 10 o'clock, the lights turn down, the music comes on, and you could watch the fireworks from Ohana across the lagoon at the Magic Kingdom. And since that time, I have loved this restaurant. We took a little break from it because for some reason my family decided it wasn't good anymore, which is something my family does sometimes for no reason. They just decide something's not good anymore. And so we didn't go for a while. And I remember when we were going in 2000, or was it, we didn't go again until 2008, did we, to Ohana?
No, it was after that because the first time I went was 09 and it wasn't even with you, Matt.
Oh, so I must have still been under that guise, like, this not good.
I think so, because I think I, like you, saw it and thought, oh, meat skewers, that sounds pretty good. I'm going to take my parents there. We took our whole family. And then I think I reached out to you about it, and you were like, yeah, it's not the same as it used to be, or something like that.
Well, they did do some menu changes for a while there that were just like, they were just different. And for some reason, I just remember thinking, it must have been just my family's opinion wearing off on me. I think we went back when we went in 2010, just with my wife, and we took some kids from our church in Nashville, and I was like, this place is amazing. And I have been preaching the gospel of Ohana since then.
Mm. Yeah, and we've talked about it, of course. We've talked about the bread pudding. We've talked about the bathrooms right beside it. But we've never given an official review of Ohana.
Yes.
Now seems like the best time.
Yeah, why not? It just won everything.
Everything.
Yep, and it's going to Disney World.
All right, well, let's start with atmosphere. So it's on the amazing. Second story. Yes, amazing. That's a good word to say. It's on the second story of Disney's Polynesian Village Resort. It's got the huge windows just all along one wall. It's got the big open flame grill pit thing in the middle. It's very dark. Certain places are very dark. Yes. Obviously, since the windows are there, if it's before sunset, it's not all that dark. But if it's after sunset, it's very intimate.
Yeah, I advise going after the sun goes down. It's just a much more magical experience.
Yeah, I agree. Do they play music in there?
They do, unless the live entertainment is there, in which case he, she, and they are doing it. Because there's the one, our favorite Coco, who does some live entertainment sometimes. And then the night she's not there, I've seen like just one guy with a ukulele there doing it. But if not, it's just kind of your standard Lifescapes Target CD Hawaiian music playing in the background, which is wonderful. I think the atmosphere begins before you even get into the place. If you know you're going for Ohana, like, and you know that's what what this is when you're approaching the resort. You already smell the oak because the grill is an oak wood grill, and you already smell that outside. And then once you step in and you head over there, that's one of the first things that kind of hits you. In fact, I would say the Polynesian smell is different from the other resorts, almost like Animal Kingdom Lodge. It's there is a clean resort smell to it. There's also that kind of smoky food smell coming from Ohana, and then Animal Kingdom Lodge coming from Boma, that just makes it almost all the more magical. And that's certainly part of the atmosphere to me. My favorite part is just the wood paneling and the wood, the tiki statues and all the little torches on, and the intimate atmosphere of it. But the thing, what makes it so intimate is those torches, and it's just kind of dimly lit, and you can see the wood carved fish and the tiki faces and all that stuff. It just makes you feel like you're in the Polynesian Islands somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So when you arrive, there's a server who comes to you and explains that Ohana means family. And then they take you to the counter where there's a loaf of pineapple coconut bread waiting for you. And then they escort you and your loaf of bread to your table. And then that's when you just settle in and just wait as food item after food item is brought to you.
Yeah. Starting with that pineapple coconut bread, which is amazing.
So good.
It's dry. You know, I think coconut pineapple bread, you might think like King's Hawaiian or something like a little moist, but it's a dry kind of, almost like ciabatta kind of bread, but it's just sweet, and there's little, and it's not like overly sweet, but there's hints of pineapple and coconut. Oh, and it's delicious. You just go ahead and tell them to get you two loaves.
I was just about to say, I remember when you and I and Jeremy, the last time we went, we were so hungry. Because we've been waiting, we've been like basically starving ourselves for this meal. And we got there and we're like, you might as well throw a second one on there. And they kind of hesitated at first thinking we were kidding. And then when they realized we were serious, they were like, okay, well, that's fine. So they gave us a second one.
There's no butter or like spread with it, but it's not necessary. It's just,
And then next, you are brought a series of appetizers. Help me out if I'm forgetting something, but I know there's the Polynesian-ish salad. Which is very good. There's not a lot to it.
But I love Disney World salads and that vinaigrette they put on them, which is kind of almost similar no matter where you go. It's just refreshing and delicious and goes with that bread really well. I think this is like a, it's just like an apple cider vinaigrette. I mean, it's very light and fruity.
Yeah, it's just got like a touch of tropicalness to it.
Tropicalness.
Yes. Then you've got the honey coriander wings, which are always a hit. And then my personal favorite are the pork dumplings.
Yes, those are good.
And they bring all these out pretty much immediately after you order your drinks. And they're all you can eat. So if you run out of something, just ask for more.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Don't forget these appetizers. Everything is all you can eat.
Yeah, I mean, listen, but these appetizers, they're nice. I appreciate the effort, but that's not what I'm here for.
I don't know. Those honey coriander wings.
I find myself asking when they come back, and like, would you like some more steak or something? Like, can I have some more pot stick?
Yeah.
Some more noodles and the vegetables. Listen, don't be deceived by the stir fry vegetables that come with the noodles. Those things are delicious. Now, I like vegetables, but if you don't like vegetables, they're stir-fried, and they got some kind of sauce on them, and they are wonderful. So I feel you. I love the meat on a stick, but I'm also just bring out some more pot stickers and some noodles. I can eat those things all night.
Yeah, I think they bring the noodles and the stir-fried vegetables next. Like, I think it's part of the entree, but for me, it's the noodles. Like, I got to be careful, because I can fill up on those noodles really easily before the meat comes. Are they egg noodles? I think that's the term for them.
Yeah, it's like lo mein, but not as saucy as, like, Chinese lo mein.
Not as heavy and not as thick, but the same type of feel. And they got, like, a teriyaki-ish pineapple even kind of sauce on them. Oh, my word.
Well, when they bring out the other sauces, there's like a sweet and sour, and there's, this is where it is. There's like a little peanut dipping sauce. And I put that, I feel like there's people at the hibachi restaurant that put the yum yum sauce on their fried rice. Like, give me some more of that white sauce. That's me with the peanut sauce and those noodles. I'm like, can you bring me some more peanut sauce? I'm like dumping it on the noodles.
Don't make fun, because I am that way with the yum yum sauce.
Oh, no, me too. But oh, okay. it's just funny that if you're at like a highfalutin kind of hibachi place and they're like rolling their eyes at you, like, Benihana, you bring me some white sauce, please. I want to dump it on everything.
The equivalent of asking for ranch.
Yeah, I want to put mayonnaise on all this.
Yeah, but anyway, you got to be careful. You have to pace yourself, because yes, you've got these wonderful appetizers, you've got the delicious noodles and the stir-fried vegetables, which I think is like broccoli, a little corn on the cob things.
There's little mushrooms, I think.
Yeah, maybe mushroom, maybe onions, like red onions.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not a lot, but the seasoning on it is really good. But then the star of the show, which seems to change every year, but I think right now the lineup is shrimp on a skewer, dark meat chicken on a skewer, and then the steak. And these things, as good as that sauce is, I actually don't use the sauce, because the marinade on these meats is so good to me. It's like packed with flavor.
Yeah. No, I love that that peanut sauce. I don't even mess with the sweet and sour sauce. I don't even know what it tastes like, probably. That peanut sauce, though, everything goes in there. Just like two forks and eat in that sauce.
Now, when the three of us first went, I think they had four meats, and I know one of them was turkey.
Yeah, it was.
Turkey. I remember turkey, yeah.
I think pork also used to be on the menu.
Yeah.
But anyway, now it's chicken, steak, shrimp.
Yeah, which is adequate.
I'll take it, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little hungry right now.
Once again, all you can eat. So they bring these giant skewers. There are probably 20 pieces of chicken, and they're like, how many do you want? And I bet if you said all 20, they would just give it to you.
They would. And I'll say this. I've never had I never had a waiter or waitress that was stingy with it. Like, when you ask for more, you would expect them to be like, okay, here's a piece. Like the little take-home entrees you get with the take-home entree at Olive Garden. But, no, they'll scrape it off of there. And then the shrimp, too, which you would expect them to be really stingy about. But I love the shrimp. Some people don't. It is peel and eat. So you got to peel it yourself. And that grates on my wife's nerves, but she still likes it. But I like that just fine. I can eat those shrimp forever.
And then just when you think you're about to burst and you can't possibly eat anymore, they bring that wonderful, heavenly, miraculous bread pudding with the Bananas Foster caramel sauce. And first timers always say, I don't know about that.
Yeah. No, just eat it. Just put it in your mouth.
Just eat it, because you will be converted forever to the Ohana bread pudding. I don't know. Lover's Club. Something.
I mean, it's one of those Disney secrets. Like, they make a whole dish and dessert out of the leftover bread. Clearly, because it's made with that coconut pineapple bread. But
why not?
It is, yeah, it is wonderful. And that banana sauce is what makes it. I think they put it on the side. You pour it on yourself, right?
Right. It comes in basically like one of those little cream miniature pitchers.
And there's a nice scoop of ice cream on top, and all that together is just wonderful. And this too, not that I've ever done this, because you just can't by that point. This too is all you can eat. So if you just want to go and save up for the dessert and that be the thing you're doing, then, you know, have at it.
Yeah. And I want to say, people complain about the price of this place. Like, I just read a review today that was like, it was too expensive for us. Like, we liked it. But I'm actually surprised that it's not much more expensive, considering A, it's all you can eat, but B, it's one of the hardest places to book at Disney World. And you would think that they would raise the price just for that reason alone.
If I was just guessing, like if I didn't know any better and I was just saying, this is how much it is, I would say at least 50.
Yeah. When I went in October, it was 40, and I got my 10% discount as an annual pass holder. So $36 to me for a Disney restaurant like this felt pretty reasonable.
That is a good price, because if you go to like Texas Day Brazil or whatever, which is kind of a similar concept, you're going to pay much more than $36 there.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Just outside the resort there, they have all those Brazilian steakhouses, and they're just as much, if not more.
Now, of course, at this place, you can order drinks, and that's going to add to your bill.
Yeah.
But I think you get two non-alcoholic beverages with your meal. So, and then, now, the thing we do have to mention, I feel like, is the entertainment for the kids. I still feel like this doesn't match the feel of the restaurant.
It doesn't. Maybe if they stopped it at a certain time.
Yeah, like just for the breakfast, because Lilo and Stitch are there, so that makes sense. But they have all these activities where it's like, all kids line up, we're going to run around the restaurant.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like that kind of place.
And, you know, I found letting children run around a big open fire pit is never a good idea.
That's a really good point. I still remember when they did it. The last time the three of us were there, and the kid stopped by our table.
There was a kid resting his arm on our table.
And Matt, just for like a solid minute, just gave him a death stare. Kind of like, you sure you want to be doing that?
Yeah.
Good times. But yeah, don't leave before at least Coco shows up, because she is the one who brings by the free Lays as a souvenir.
The flower necklaces, not potato chips.
Or sex.
Yeah.
Neither of those. Nope. It's just plastic flowers that you can keep forever. I still have two of mine.
With like drinking straws in between them.
Yeah, that is what it is. You're right.
Like the cut up drinking straw.
The next time we go, we should make sure to say I got laid by Coco.
We should all make shirts.
Yeah.
But haven't we mentioned on the show that we're not entirely sure that's her name? So what if she was like, I'm Maria.
And she's not that great. Listen, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I love you and not everything, but that is the one downside. It's like when she kind of like, oh. But look, it's not enough to detract from that restaurant. And there are other times, if you care that much, call and say, hey, what's Coco's schedule? And go on the night she's not there. Because there's another dude. Well, there's another dude that's great. And I've only been there once with him. And he's just a kind of a heavier set, like, Hawaiian guy with a Hawaiian shirt on, playing a ukulele and singing little Hawaiian folk songs, and that was spectacular.
Well, the worst part is she overdoes it. I think if she just came out, she's mahalo everyone.
Mahalo.
It's like, all right.
Yeah, she says ukulele.
Well, listen, we're not saying anything new by saying we like Ohana. It is definitely a fan favorite. And on this show, if you've listened to us for some time, you know that usually we kind of balk against the things that people love because we tend to say they're overrated. But in this case, I mean, I was just there a few months ago, and I don't see anything about it that's overrated.
No, it's one of those, everybody, quote unquote, everybody loves it.
It's so good.
Mahalo.
On this week's show, we're going to keep the Polynesian theme going since Ohana was our big winner for the Munch Madness tournament. We're going to talk about 10 times Disney made us fall in love with Polynesia. And we're going to go back in time and talk about all the many things the Walt Disney Company has introduced to us that had a Polynesian theme, that had us shaking in our grass skirts and singing and playing the ukulele.
Melakalikimaka.
To start off our list of 10 times Disney made us fall in love with Polynesia, we're going to go back actually to 1934. So you guys, I don't think you've read this, but I came across an article on Oh My Disney that was called The Wonderful World of Walt, Aloha and Mahalo, Walt Disney. And there was a brief segment about Walt and Lillian's first trip to Hawaii during a time when the whole Hawaiian culture was really, really popular and people were flocking there to enjoy the South Pacific Islands. So I just want to read this real quick. It says, Walt and Lillian Disney made their first trip to Hawaii in 1934, sailing on the Matson Liner Lurline from Los Angeles on August 10th. They arrived in Honolulu the morning of Thursday, August 16th, 1934. Walt's arrival in the islands was big news, rating a headline at the top of the Honolulu Advertiser's August 17th front page, accompanied by photos of both Walt and Lily. The Advertiser reported, he had no sooner set foot ashore than he was besieged with invitations to go here, go there, meet this one, and do that for someone else. Walt coyly replied, I don't want to do anything except lie on the beach in the sun and wiggle my toes in the sand. That Saturday morning, Walt made a personal appearance before sold-out houses at two downtown Honolulu movie theaters, The Princess and the Liberty. At one of these appearances, the Advertiser reported that Walt asked the audience, would you like Mickey to come to Honolulu on the surfboard? When I go back, I will make a Mickey on a surfboard, as I have been on and off one since coming here and know just how it feels. True to Walt's word, on September 24th, 1937, RKO Radio Pictures released Walt Disney's Hawaiian Holiday, starring Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, Pluto, Donald Duck, and Goofy, all on vacation in Hawaii. Directed by Ben Sharpstein, the film recast the manic surfboard acrobatics to Mickey's more comically appropriate co-star, Goofy. And so, the first item on our list of times Disney made us fall in love with Polynesia is Hawaiian Holiday, the Mickey Mouse short from 1937.
Yeah, it's just pure Disney goodness.
It is on YouTube, if anyone wants to watch it in its entirety. It's like 8 or 9 minutes long. It's not all that long.
I had a little VHS, you know, when you had the little VHS collections of some of the shorts, and it was on one of those, and I used to watch it a lot. You know, Minnie's playing her little ukulele, and she has her grass skirt on, and they're singing little Hawaiian folk songs, and it's just one of those classic kind of Disney shorts. There's not really a plot, per se. It's just the gang having a good time on the beach, and the misadventures of Goofy on the surfboard, and the water is animated and doing things to him, and you know, it's just one of those charming 1930s, 40s era Disney shorts that's wonderful. You can always picture these kind playing on the resort TVs at Disney World. It's got that really nice vacation vibe to it.
As soon as it zooms in on Mickey and he just drums the one chord on the ukulele, and it's that, it just instantly takes you there because it's that Hawaiian sound. You know, like yeah. You're at a luau and the waves are crashing. My favorite gag is at the very end, actually, when Goofy's on his surfboard and the surfboard chases him through the waves back onto the shore, and he gets buried in the sand and the surfboard stands up in the sand and it looks like a tombstone.
Yeah.
Such a great little imagery.
A little dark.
Well, but they all laugh. They all say, ah, ha, 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 ha.
He's dead.
This is the first short, and this just came to my mind in a Disney tradition because we didn't put this on our list. It literally just came to me. Toy Story did their own Hawaiian vacation short as well.
That's right.
And it is awesome. It is so much fun. And it, again, not much of a plot in it. It's just kind of all these little gags, Hawaiian gags, as Ken and Barbie miss the flight to go to Hawaii with Bonnie. So, good times.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, do you want to move us on to the next item on our list?
It would be a privilege. And the next item is arguably the best on the list. And that is, in 1963, Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room opened. The Enchanted Tiki Room, such a rich history, as we know and have gushed over on this show before. But the first use of audio animatronics in these tiki birds, originally going to be kind of a dinner show kind of a feel where people would be dining beneath them, and it just didn't work out. So then it became ultimately what it is now. But set in a magical, enchanted tiki room, if you would, these birds become your entertainment, and they call the tiki gods and the flowers and the plants and things to put on the show along with them. And as we've said before, this is just pure 1950s, 1960s innocence at its best. You go into the Enchanted Tiki Room and the cares of the world and the jadedness of the world is just stripped away. And it's just very calming and relaxing and innocent. And that's why I love it.
Yeah, you know, thinking about it, I wouldn't be opposed. You're not going to like this, but I wouldn't be opposed. In fact, I'd kind of welcome if it became a quick service location.
Hmm.
Just bear with me. Like, if there was a Sunshine Terrace and you could go in there and sit up under the Tiki Room and, like, every 20 minutes there's a show, I don't know. I think that'd be nice. I would go for that.
Would the menu be, like, Ohana Light?
Yeah. Well, maybe, like, if the Sunshine Terrace added some food. Sunshine Terrace? Or is that... Yeah, the Sunshine Tree place over there. Yeah. Or no, the Sunshine Tree moved.
Yeah, they now moved. I think it's Aloha Isle, yeah.
Well, it was the same difference. You know, if they added some little appetizers and stuff, but even if it was just the ice cream place and they had that kind of place open where you could just walk in and have a seat either out by the waterfall in the pre-show or up under the birds in that place, that wouldn't be terrible. And maybe more people could experience it that way that wouldn't otherwise have gone in to watch the show.
I could see that, but I don't want to touch tradition. You don't mess with orthodoxy.
They tried, and it did not work.
It didn't work well for them.
No. Of course, the 1963 version is the Disneyland one, but we got the same thing in Walt Disney World. It is kind of interesting that, I mean, Walt had to have had a great love for all things Hawaii, because this was the very first audio animatronic, and I've never really thought about this till this moment, but, like, what made him think... You know, we have this audio animatronic technology. The first thing I want to do is create a restaurant with singing birds. You know, it just must have been really popular at the time.
Well, I think the birds audio animatronics was very simple because they didn't have they didn't need the articulation that perhaps a human mouth might need to speak. I mean, a bird's beak is just going to open and close, you know, with nothing more than that. So probably simplicity was their main goal, but. What made them choose the theming of Polynesian? That is beyond me. Because you literally could put birds in any situation and have any kind of a background or show.
Yeah.
Well, it does kind of make... That time period kind of makes me think of, like, the Elvis movies where, you know, he was on the beach a few times. And I just looked it up. It's not Disney. I thought it was. But Annette Funicello is in that movie Beach Party, which came out in 1963. So I think there is something to the fact that the whole Hawaiian culture was just really... People really liked it and wanted to travel to Hawaii.
Yeah, you're still on the tail end of that innocence of the 1950s. And I say innocence, you know, there was obviously not innocent things happening in the country and the culture at the time. But as far as entertainment goes, it was very whitewashed reality is what you saw in entertainment. You had the beach movie, you had Leave It to Beaver, you had all those kind of things. Until you get to like the mid-60s when, you know, it started to be a little more colorful, a little more cutting edge, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And every single song in Tiki Room just has that great Polynesian feel, whether it's the birds singing or whether it's the war chant or whoever it is. Like every song just takes you there, you know?
Derek, when you do the oogada boogada boogada boogada, I just feel like I'm there.
Well, you don't want me to sing the other song because all I hear is na fa na fa na fa na fa na fa na fa la. I have no idea what they're saying, but it's great.
How offensive. No. it is interesting. It's interesting that the four birds, your hosts, are French, German, Irish, and...
Spanish?
Yeah. Kind of like a Mexican accent.
Shorter.
Yeah. It's that's interesting. And that they're all here in Polynesia. But they've come from all over the world to the magical sunshine pavilion. And that's the whole premise. But the crux of the show is everywhere from hula music to war chants and all the stuff in between. And arguably one of my favorite parts of the whole attraction is actually when you're leaving and they have just that just relaxing steel guitar ukulele xylophone music playing in the exit area. It's just all around magical, and I guess innocent captures the feel of the whole thing. You're completely separated from the real world for 20 minutes.
And let's not forget how beautiful the exterior is as well, and the queue, which we've talked about before, but that often gets lost, particularly since that atrocious Magic Carpets is in the way, but you get some really beautiful aesthetics out front.
I love being able to see that from the Swiss Family Treehouse. You see the big old tower. I don't know what that thing is called, but like with the thatched roof and all that, that tower's high in the sky. Love it.
Yeah. I can probably tie my fascination and affinity for Hawaiian folk music and culture to, let's say, Ohana and the Tiki Room. I love the, I've always loved the window facade, the dioramas when you're in the Tiki Room, and there's the four windows that look outside onto the, there's a volcano and the ocean, and it's actually kind of, the water's kind of sparkling. And then there's some real trees, or like some, well, they're probably fake, but there's real foliage right there in the window. And then it starts raining in the show, and I always thought that was just the most magical. And there's this smell at both the Polynesian Resort and the Tiki Room. And I think maybe it's the hardwood and the thatch, the is it straw? You know, that kind of the grass roofing and stuff. I don't know if that's what the smell is, but it's kind of similar in both places. And I love that. That smell. Next one comes just a year later at the New York World's Fair, and then it found its home both at Disneyland and at Walt Disney World, and that's It's a Small World. And you might say, where is that in It's a Small World, the Polynesian vibe, that is? And if you recall, about halfway through the attraction, there's an entire, shall we say, corner?
Sure. I mean, it's
an entire...
It's like a room.
It's almost the entire room that is completely devoted to the Polynesian islands, whether it's Hawaii and Fiji and Tahiti, and all of those are represented in this room. But as soon as you enter, and if you've ridden Small World before, you know that the music is the same throughout, but the style changes from place to place. And I love this part because when you enter in there, as soon as you get in there, you hear that still guitar, the pedal guitar go,
and
it's like, yes, we're here. And they have the blue water effects on the wall, and there's the fish jumping and the beautiful like tiki looking sunshine up above. And it's just a wonderful, it is my favorite room. It's a close between this one and the jungle.
Yeah.
The jungle room. But
I was just thinking the same thing, because the jungle really picks up the pace with that music.
Yes.
But the Hawaiian is like, okay, just sit back. We've got you.
Yeah.
And it's got my favorite animatronic in this room is the surfer boy, because the surfboard just goes up, down. And he's got his arms straight out, you know? Yeah. I love that guy.
There's little ladies on the side.
Yes, those are my favorite. Because they don't just like... It's not like a graceful shake. It's like having a seizure shake. It's like, oh.
It does move like much faster than is humanly possible. And then there are the guys on the drums too. Like they have like tiki masks over their faces.
Yeah.
And they're and their little heads are going side to side.
Yeah. That's all I can remember from this room. Oh, and it's got to be. This is the room where, like, as you exit, the doorway is that giant teepee looking thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a big triangle, like the entrance to the Tiki Room or something. Just like a big outward triangle entrance. I don't know how to... If you put your arms out in front of you like you're about to dive off a diving board, that's what
Like. Yes. It kind of reminds me of the ends of the buildings at the Polynesian Resort.
Yeah. I can hear the music right now, and it makes me want to go listen to it. Just that guitar in the background with the drums. Dun, 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 dun.
All right, well, that takes us to number 4 on our list. Now we are officially moving to Walt Disney World, when in 1971, Disney's Polynesian Resort opened, along with Magic Kingdom and the Contemporary Resort. Now, of course, Ohana is here, and we'll talk about a few other things later, but right now, let's just talk about the resort itself. It is kind of interesting to me that you're only going to build 2 resorts. Well, only 2 ended up getting built. I think they had ideas for 5.
There's like a Persian one, wasn't
it? A Persian, a Venetian, and I think just like Asian in general.
Yeah, and this was called, when it opened, it was called the Polynesian Village Resort.
Right. When did it become Polynesian? Just Polynesian?
1985, the year I was born.
Oh, hey. And then just, I think since we started this podcast, it has since...
Yeah, it was 2014 or 15.
Okay, yeah, it has since returned to Polynesian Village Resort. But no, I was just going to say, you have 5 ideas, but only 2 get off the ground. And for one of those 2 to be Polynesian themed, I mean, it's just so specific to me, but I love it. And I read on the Disney Parks blog years ago that an early concept for this resort featured a 12-story tower, much like you would see, like, the luxury hotels in Honolulu, you know, on the beach there. But eventually the plan evolved, and now it's more like a village layout, hence the name Polynesian Village Resort. It's got the longhouse, the longhouses, and it's got the great ceremonial house in the middle. And I also read that construction didn't begin until February 1971, less than 8 months before the first guests were scheduled to arrive.
Oh my.
Cutting it close.
That's fast.
So what do you guys love about this resort?
Everything. I remember, obviously, it's always, it's one of those that everyone sees when you go to the Magic Kingdom. It's like, there's that. And when we started eating at Ohana, we were able to go in it and go through the lobby, and I saw the pool with the volcano. And let's just stop and pay homage and remember the old, better lobby. I'm just looking at a picture right now of that wonderful lava rock, insanely large fountain waterfall that was in the middle. Oh. And the underwater lights and the greenery all around it. I mean, just what in the world were you thinking to get rid of that? It was beautiful and made the whole place just smell of that Disney waterfall smell. Who knows? But in 2014, they redid the lobby. They tried to make it all relevant and hipster. And they got little, I don't know, colored globes hanging from the ceiling or something. But that original waterfall captured the essence of that resort. All right, why are you going to argue? What are you going to say?
Listen, I hear you. I get it. The waterfall was great. I find something so charming, though, about those colored globes and lanterns and the Tiki Shrug statue in the middle. And it's just quieter. Like, when you walk in there, there's just, like, this peaceful nothing. You know, whereas it used to be, like, the crashing sound of the water. And not that that was bad at all, but I don't know. I actually like the changes. And it's a resort that, because it's so orange and brown, just kind of all the way around, it's already going to give you a very 70s vibe. And I think removing the waterfall actually brought it into a modern age. Like, it's never going to get rid of that 70s stigma, I don't think, because of all the browns and oranges.
No, and they kind of embraced it.
Well, yeah, exactly. And they should.
They brought the village back and the font on the sign.
Yes.
That old retro vibe.
And so I think the lobby is like a good balance now of modern and 70s. But anyway, you're not the only person who does not like the changes, so I get it.
If you ever want to do yourself a favor, you just go look at old pictures of the Polynesian Resort and, like, the rooms in the 1970s, and it's like, what? But imagine, like, Blanche's room on the Golden Girls, and that's what you've got in there.
Oh,
Well, my absolute favorite thing that they did when they remodeled all the rooms just a couple years ago was now, you know, a lot of resorts, moderate and deluxe both, have those pull-down beds where it just looks like a cabinet, but then you pull it down and there's a little backdrop. And the backdrop for these is the electrical water pageant, which I think is so great.
That's cool. Did you know that John Lennon, do you know the story?
Yes. Thanks to Jeremy.
Thanks to Jeremy? Well, Jeremy can tell it if Jeremy's the historian in the bunch.
No, Matt, go ahead to continue.
Well, you might know more details than I do. I just know that he signed the paperwork that led to the dismantling of the Beatles at the Polynesian Resort.
That pretty much sums it up. Yeah, he was there.
Lots of history at the Walt Disney Parks. At the contemporary, was it Richard Nixon's I'm Not a Crook Nixon speech?
Yep.
And then there's lots of cultural turmoil in the Disney resorts.
It's true. One of my favorite things at this resort is something that, I mean, obviously would be at a resort called Polynesian Village, and it's so simple, but I love the torches that are all around. They line every pathway. They're all around the pool. They're when you enter the building, they're everywhere, and I love them.
Yeah, the entrance to this resort is one of my favorites in that it's like almost a bridge over a beautiful lagoon. And if they took away the waterfall on the inside, at least this one is still on the outside with all the beautiful tropical plants and greenery and a wonderful little lagoon, and the torches are burning and the music is playing. And if you're one of those people that just feels weird about going into a resort or what have you that you're not staying at, you never resort hopped before, do yourself a favor and just go chill out here one afternoon on your Disney vacation, or show up early for dinner for Ohana or Kona Cafe and just chill out at the resort a while.
Wait till sunset though, because that's the best time.
Oh yeah, it's just a wonderful place, like a vacation within a vacation.
Mm-hmm. It's got some great views of Magic Kingdom out there by the pool, by the beach.
Well, speaking of Ohana, there are other restaurants at the Polynesian Resort as well. And maybe you want to dine at one of these locations. We've already talked about Ohana, so we won't talk about that anymore. But mentioned earlier, Kona Cafe and Captain Cook's. I've never been to Captain Cook's. I have been to Kona Cafe. We went there been there a couple times, I believe, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, y'all been for breakfast, and I haven't, but y'all enjoyed the breakfast, correct?
It was great.
The Kona coffee.
Oh, the Kona coffee. The French press is amazing. And it's one of those places, I don't know if it ever completely books out. What's the word? Sells out? Books up?
Yeah, books out.
So it felt very laid back. You know, we weren't rushed. The tables around us weren't full. It was and of course the food is delicious.
Have you had dinner here?
I haven't. Have you?
Okay. I've had dinner twice and they were both very different experiences. One was we went with some friends and I got the noodle bowl and it was great. And they have their own bread here and I can only compare it to like a big King's Hawaiian roll. Like it's a big bun. Imagine like the bread at like Longhorn or something, like a big bun they put in the middle. And it's a softer, more moist bread, but it's macadamia nut. It's coconut macadamia bread. And it's delicious. And it does come with the honey butter and it's wonderful. I had the noodle bowl there and then I've had sushi there, and they're both terrific. The only thing I do not care for about this restaurant is that it's completely open. Like, it's not closed off. It's not in a separate place. It's open in the lobby, and it more or less feels like a quick service. But it's delicious nonetheless. If you can't get into Ohana and you still want to eat it there, you can easily get a reservation.
Yeah, and do not underestimate Captain Cook's. While it is a quick service restaurant with both seating inside and seating outside right by the pool, it is easily one of my favorite quick service restaurants in all of Walt Disney World. And if you can't get the Tonga Toast at Kona Cafe, you can get it here for like $7 with meat.
Oh, this place. Pulled pork nachos.
Just, yes. Mm. Hands easily. Or, yeah, I don't know what I'm saying. Easily.
Easily. Yeah. It's so easy. No, it's delicious. No,
delicious is what the word I was thinking of. Yeah. It's kind of an awkward layout. I feel like waiting in line's kind of awkward.
Yeah, that whole place down there. Like, why is it tucked off the side like that?
It's so small.
Go find it. It's wonderful.
Oh, wait, I have been to Captain Cook's. We ate there, Matt. I just remembered.
Did we?
I think Yeah. You talked about this. Yeah. I've had, I think, three things from there, and everything I've had has been just top-notch. So, yeah, the other restaurants at Poly, worth checking out.
Speaking of not top-notch, the next thing on our list... somebody else want to say it, or you want me to say it? The Spirit of Aloha Dinner Show.
Not a fan, huh?
Well, I mean, we've been to it, and we've talked about how it was the perfect storm to not be a good evening, both literally and figuratively.
None of our rushing and hurrying and matching and awkward picture taking, none of that affected my opinion of that evening. Not even the food. The food was great. It was, first of all, do we even know what we're talking about? Did we announce it?
No, this is the... Yeah, you said Spirit of Aloha. If you don't know, this is the luau that takes place outdoors, but at the Polynesian Resort. And you're right. I agree with you, Matt. Like, after we got the picture and we sat down, my mood was, like, night and day from what it had been just a few minutes before.
It was just the show. It was a show about a show.
And it was long. It's over 2 hours long. Yeah.
It's long, and it was rainy that day, so the humidity level was intense. And you're outside... And you're sticky.
I mean, the first part is excruciating. It's like someone has described it. Maybe it was us that described it. I don't remember if it was us or not. Had described it as a high school drama about a group of people putting on a luau show. And that's what it is. That first part is like, what are we going to do about the show, cousin? The show starts and they're trying to figure it out. And it's the girl's birthday or something. And it's up to her to plan the show. Now, the second part of the show, when the actual luau begins to happen, is what is all you need. All you need is the hula dancers and, you know, some of that. And then the fire guy with the baton with the fire on the end. And the actual Hawaiian folk band that's playing in the background. I don't need all the other drama. That's all you want with a luau, is a Hawaiian cultural show to please the average American white person. That's all I want.
Well, and you said the food was great. I mean, it's been a few years. I thought the food was good, but great. Because this is like $70, I want to say, around $70.
Well, yeah, it's a dinner show.
Sure, it's a show. I get that. But weren't the only meats like ribs and chicken?
Yeah, but that's good. And then they had the rice.
And you do get the pineapple bread. No, I thought it was good. You get a salad with it. But I just feel like, I don't know.
It wasn't $70 good.
No, it's fine. Everything about this is fine.
If they just went with
it. You keep saying it, we'll start believing it.
if they just got rid of the bad drama portion and went to just a kind of relaxed, chill out Hawaiian luau, I would definitely go here again and take my wife on like a date night and go do that.
And what about a shuttle? Because it's way in the back.
Yeah.
It is back there.
Oh, we walked it.
Yeah. Oh, Lord, did we walk.
Well, you know, they added the Lilo and Stitch thing a few years ago. I actually think they should add a few Moana songs. Like, there are a few, there are a few songs on the Moana soundtrack that are the traditional Hawaiian language, whatever that is, and they're chanting, and it's really upbeat. I feel like if you got, you know, 10 dancers who could do some really cool choreography to those songs, it would add a little something.
Yes, what's the song that it talks about their history, and they...
Well, that too, yeah, We Know the Way.
Oh, that's such a good one, I like that.
Yeah, it could bring the mood down a little bit, more intimate if you played that. Yeah, I don't know. Like you said, it's like a show about a show, and you're kind of like, what are we... Just bring more food. Like, what are we watching? What's happening?
Yeah.
Replace the beginning part with the Moana segment and also the Stitch segment from Mickey and the Magical Map.
I don't know. No, I don't know. I don't want movies and stuff being brought in. That's just more of the same to me. Let's not Disney-fy it too much. This needs to be calm, cool. This needs to... I'm sorry I jumped on you there. But don't do that. Jeremy will go, I won't.
I think it's great that this exists. Like, it's kind of a no-brainer to bring a luau show to the Polynesian Village Resort. I think it could be fine-tuned a bit. But overall, if you're looking for a dinner show and Hoop-Dee-Doo is just too expensive or sold out, I mean, I guess try this. It's hard for me to say you can't go wrong. Or
if you got $70 burning a hole in your pocket.
I guess try this. That's great.
And everything else in Walt Disney World is booked.
Well, look, if you got that deluxe dining plan and you can just do basically whatever you want every day, then go do this.
Sure.
One night. And just, you know, try it out. Now, listen, I certainly would just say go to Ohana over this any day until they reinvent the show a little bit or something. I don't know, but...
You will not leave raving about the show.
Right.
There's nothing in that show that you can't see in another part of Walt Disney World. You want to see somebody twirl fire? Go to Festival of the Lion King. You want to see grass skirts? Go to It's a Small World. I mean, there's nothing there that is original or unique.
That's very interesting, yeah. The only thing is maybe the environment, but that's a lot of money to spend to just get that luau environment. But
put some chicken wings in your pocket and go to the Tiki Room queue.
Nice, nice. Well, you may not be raving about the Aloha, Spirit of Aloha dinner show, but one thing people do rave about is number 7 on our list of things we love, and it's the Dole Whip.
The Dole Whip.
Whip. It's got a nice little Polynesian theme brought right to you at both Magic Kingdom and Captain Cook's, correct? Can't you get it there?
I want to say yes.
You can get it at the Pineapple Lanai that's outside on the dock there behind Captain Cook's. But I mean, basically, it's Captain Cook's. Yeah. It's back there.
Well, this is the pineapple treat that you can find in Magic Kingdom. Soft serve. It's just pineapple soft serve. It's the simple Dole Whip is just pineapple soft serve, right?
Correct.
Okay. But you can also get it swirled with vanilla soft serve. You can get the Dole Whip float with pineapple juice.
That's where the magic is.
Ah. See, I need to try that because I did not find the Dole Whip to be very magical.
Well, I'm not a huge ice cream or even soft serve person. But when it's on top of... I like floats with soft serve. And so when it's that pineapple juice on the bottom and the ice cream... I'm all about that. And they melt together and you can drink it. That's good.
I know this is like Disney heresy, but I'm not a big fan of the Dole Whip either. I like it. I mean, it's not my go-to treat. I think my biggest problem with it is it's not as creamy as I expected it to be in and of itself.
For me, it's the tartness. Like, I just can't do a whole bowl of that. That's just a lot of tartness. When you get the float, do you get just straight up pineapple soft serve or do you get swirl with the juice?
Now, I think, Matt, you get like the vanilla ice cream with the pineapple juice over that.
Oh, no. Pineapple on pineapple. Double up.
Interesting. Oh. Are you allowed to get the swirl?
Yeah, you can get whatever you want.
Huh.
Now, but I think before the citrus swirl thing came back, they had even an orange-flavored soft serve. They might still, and you could swirl those. And I didn't like that very much, but... they did have that if you wanted the orange flavor instead.
Interesting. But yeah, you can't have an episode about Polynesian things at Disney without talking about the Dole Whip. You know, many a blog have listed this as the number one treat to try at Walt Disney World. I personally would disagree, but I know lots of people who love it. So there you go.
In 2011, Disney... capitalized yet again on its love and our love for all things Hawaiian and Polynesian when it opened an actual Polynesian resort, Aulani, which was a Disney Vacation Club resort in Hawaii. So this is a massive resort. Don't think Polynesian resort. I know I said that, but I only meant in location only. This is a massive, multi-level, like, think, like, and I don't mean this in the sense of the theming and the flashiness, but like a Vegas-style high-rise hotel, and there's two sides of it. And then in the middle is this elaborate, very well landscaped rockwork volcano. There's pools. I'm sure there's slides and lazy rivers. And I think is there scuba diving?
Oh, probably, yeah.
There's all kinds of stuff in there. And that's even before you get out to the private beach. That's it's like a little private little horseshoe, perfect little swimming area for which I'm sure they excavated themselves for the guests there. And I'm guessing this place is doing fine. It's doing well. I mean, they've been around for 6 years, and they're adding stuff. And I think there's expansion plans. Am I right?
Maybe. I think it's always book solid for sure.
Yeah. So just capitalized on that whole thing. If you want a Disney vacation that's straight up in Hawaii and on a Hawaiian beach, and so you get not only the theme, but the reality of a Polynesian vacation. This is like a dream. And I would love, absolutely love to go here. But I think it's probably pretty pricey.
It is pricey. And that's not even taking into consideration, like, travel to Hawaii.
Yeah.
But when are we going here? Like, I want to go so bad. It's beautiful. And, of course, it is a Disney resort. So it's got Disney touches. Like, you can meet Mickey in his Hawaiian shirt. Things like that. You know, earlier I mentioned that the earliest concepts for the Polynesian Village Resort were a high rise. I wonder if it was going to be something similar to this, which I can't even imagine seeing this from Cinderella Castle. Like, that would be so weird.
No. I'm sure that played into all that. I was trying to look up stuff about the dining because I was interested in the restaurants that are here. It says there are four of them. There's the Lava Shack, which is a grab a snack, just kind of a little convenience store type place. Little Opihi's beachside kiosk, which is out looking like it's on the beach or next to the pool. Makahiki, the Bounty of the Islands, is a breakfast or dinner buffet.
Okay.
Interesting.
Maybe characters?
Yeah, there's a character breakfast. Or something called the Mene Hune Mischief character dining on select evenings. It sounds very Hawaiian.
Maybe in the future we can have someone who's been to Alani on the show.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we're doing a really good job of explaining this.
Mama's, yeah, but hold on. Mama's snack stop.
We're clearly...
There's a place called Off the Hook.
Very form.
Yes, we are well educated.
Papa Lua shaved ice. And then there's the place that I've always heard of as the Ama Ama, contemporary island cooking, which looks like a more upscale, adulty Hawaiian cuisine with a modern twist, it says. So I'm sure that'd be delightful. This whole place just looks magical. Just like, I mean, a Disney vacation inside a Disney vacation with Polynesian theming. So,
yeah, and I think it does pretty well. I think it may have had a struggle period when it first opened, if I remember that correctly. But now it seems to have made a name for itself. And like you said, it does have a lot of private beaches down there that only guests of the resort can access. So if you're going to Hawaii and you've got, you know, some money to spare, I don't think you're going to be disappointed with Aulani.
Well, for those who haven't turned off the podcast yet after our deep, informed review of Aulani, now we're going to talk about something we do have experience with, and that is Trader Sam's. Of course, Trader Sam's is Enchanted Tiki Bar out in Disneyland, at the Disneyland Resort, and then Trader Sam's Grog Grotto in Walt Disney World. I actually have not been to Grog Grotto. I went with Matt and his wife Jessica once, and it was closed. We didn't realize it didn't open till like 4 in the afternoon or whatever. That's when we ate at Captain Cook's instead. But I have been with Derek to Trader Sam's out in Disneyland, and I have to say I loved the experience. First off, I love that it's very small. Like, the inside is so tiny. So if you really are set on sitting on the inside, you're probably going to be disappointed there in Disneyland, because you might not get a seat. But I would argue we went right at like sunset. It was not too hot. It was nice and cool. There was live music playing in not Coco fashion. It was, a couple of big guys there just playing some beautiful music. The seating outdoors is so comfortable because it's not like chairs, like what you would think, like table and chairs. It's like
it's like patio furniture.
Yeah, but a little like more comfortable than just like a wicker chair.
Oh, sure.
And like it's almost like a coffee table style table in front of you instead of one you'd scoot up to. Anyways, you sit there. The food was wonderful. The drinks are great. You order the drinks and then you get the cup along with it. The glass. I think I got you a glass, Matt. Did I not?
You did, and it's wonderful.
Yes, and I got me one as well. So I loved Trader Sam's. In fact, I kind of wish we would have gone maybe again instead of just once during our trip. But
I'm not even a drinker, but I just loved the environment. I love the atmosphere. I love, again, the torches. The flatbread I got was delicious. I would definitely go back. And I think I think the big weenie, I don't know the word, but of this place is that they have all these special effects. If you are able to sit inside, when you order certain drinks, this effect over here goes off, or this thing makes a sound or whatever, depending on what you order. So I think that's the real draw. Maybe that's the word I was looking for. That's the draw of this place. It has a lot of fun things going on if you are able to sit inside. Which, by the way, I feel like we should mention, don't wait for them to seat you, because it's not going to happen. I think Jeremy and I, when we first walked in, we were like, what do we do? And then when Terry went with her friends last summer, I remember her texting me being like, is someone going to wait on us? Or are we just supposed to find a table? And the answer is yes, you are just supposed to find the table.
Mm-hmm. This, interesting, because it's called Trader Sam's here. And I remember back when it opened, when Trader Sam's opened, like, this doesn't make any sense, because Trader Sam's there is named after Trader Sam on the Jungle Cruise. But our quote-unquote Trader Sam here used to have a different name. And what was his name? Do we remember?
I don't.
It was like something else. It wasn't Trader Sam at all, but now they call him Trader Sam.
Right.
I've noticed since then they go to that. So, or he used to be Chief something. Something. It was Looky Looky. I don't something Hawaiian sounding like that.
Now, the drinks here can get quite pricey if you do get the souvenir mug, but these souvenir mugs are legit. Like, they're really solid and sturdy. Like, you're not going to break this just by dropping it. But I know I think one of the most popular ones is the Nautilus. And it actually looks like, what is that, a submarine? I don't even know.
Yeah. From 20,000 Leagues.
Yeah. Which I do think Grog Grotto has more of a 20,000 Leagues theme, whereas Tiki Bar has more of a Polynesian theme over in Disneyland. But the Nautilus will cost you $29 if you get the mug. So
I'd pay for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great mug, like I said, but don't expect to be able to just bring a $10 bill and be done with it.
Yeah.
Well, that's most of Walt Disney World.
That's a good point. But that brings us to the last item on our list. 10 times Disney made us fall in love with Polynesia. We would be wrong to leave this out. It's all of the movies that Disney has brought us with a Polynesian theme. And we're going to talk about three specifically. Back in 2002, Disney brought us Lilo and Stitch, which of course has made its way into many parts of Walt Disney World. In 2015, Pixar brought us the short Lava. And just last fall, we got the brand new film with music by Lin-Manuel Miranda, Moana.
Mm.
I didn't see Lilo and Stitch until last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, and it took a long time, and everybody always said that the movie was good, and maybe it was the fact that I'd waited too long, and then the attraction was open, and I hated the attraction, therefore I thought I hated the movie. And when I watched it, because we have a little girl and we were looking through Netflix for something, I'm going to turn this on. And I love it, from the kind of the watercolory backgrounds to the music and the overall theme and message of the movie. I think it's quite a lovely movie. And it does have a lot of good, solid, just like Hawaiian folk music throughout.
Totally agree.
I like it because it's very relatable. It's definitely one of the more messier Disney films, in that, you know, every character has their flaws and they're not perfect people. And I think it really, you know, resonates with people who perhaps, you know, maybe you don't identify with a Cinderella, but you'll identify with
a Leo. You know what it reminded me of? We think that that's kind of a modern thing. I read some people talk about Lilo and Stitch is the first real Disney movie, because you got social services involved, and there's a child living with her sister, and you know how it's kind of real world and modern, and it's not, and like you said, it's not fairy tale, and that's true. But Disney went through a phase with this, at least in terms of the one movie, The Rescuers, and there's been several movies in the 70s, especially. It seems like that was kind of 101 Dalmatians. There were several that were just like not fairy tales.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Rescuers. You got an orphan and a kidnapper and all this stuff.
Well, but what I'm saying is, I mean, I think there's a place in the world for fairy tales. Don't get me wrong. I think they are important. Yeah. But even something like The Rescuers, I mean, I was never kidnapped and put in a cage. So even there's an element of it being sort of a fairy tale in a sense of it's very outlandish. Whereas Lilo and Stitch, you're watching, you're like, oh my gosh, I argue with my sister just like they argue together. Uh-huh. Or
we have,
you know,
an alien.
Well,
I get what you're saying, Jeremy. I really do.
Yeah.
And Lilo is honestly one of my favorite Disney characters of all time. I always come back to her. She's instantly gif-able, honestly. Like, she has some of the best reactions just animation wise. But she's just so cute, you know?
And the way she deals with a bully in school, I mean, I think a lot of people identify with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is my favorite of the three that we just mentioned. I like them all. They all have things worth mentioning, and they're all worthy of being seen. But Lilo and Stitch, I always go back to that as my favorite Polynesian-themed Disney film. Of all the Polynesian-themed Disney films out there, this is my favorite.
The next one, Lava, the short before Inside Out, Jeremy, didn't this like change your world or something?
It didn't change my world, but I certainly enjoyed it. And I, you know, it's interesting. I mean, people are very critical, and I think people just are naturally critical of things because they feel like they're better than other people just by being critical from the start. So I remember when this short came out, everybody was like, oh, it's not that good. It's not that good. But then after kind of everybody got their opinion out there, then it was kind of like, you know, it's actually really good. And it's very, you know, catchy. The song is very sweet. The islands are modeled after an actual couple. I can't ever pronounce his name, but maybe you've heard the Somewhere Over the Rainbow version.
Yeah. Israel.
He is Israel.
Yeah, he's passed away. But so the one island, though, is model for him, and then the female island is after his wife. So I thought that was kind of cute and charming as well, and it's just a nice, good, wholesome story.
Well, now I'm afraid to say my opinion of it because you said that. I think it's okay. It didn't blow me away. That's not to say that it's bad. It just, for me, didn't really do anything.
My wife thought that it was cute. If my wife like takes the time after an animated short to say that was really cute, then that means she really liked it, and it was it did something that made her actually think that was good.
Yeah, when I say that, it is not my critical opinion of it. Like, I'm not dissecting it. I'm just saying, for me, it's like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I think it's hard to have an opinion either way on a short, because how are you going to have, I hated that. Well, it was five minutes, or I love that. It was 5 minutes long. You can't have a strong emotional attachment either way.
Trust me, you can have a strong emotional reaction to something that only lasts 5 minutes.
And then the other movie, of course, Moana, which we've shared our opinion on. And
It's I've funny. Only recently watched it, and I don't think I have shared my opinion on it.
Oh, then tell me.
I thought it was all right.
That's what I said. I want to see it again. I think my opinion will improve on the second viewing.
Now, Saturday morning, I was leaving. What was I doing? I was leaving the house to go do something, and Jessica and Anna were at home, and I had purchased it on Google, so they were watching it on the TV. And I found myself kind of lingering, like wanting to watch it because it was a certain portion at the beginning. And the animation is beautiful. Now, the people, I don't know what they were going for with kind of the big blocky people. It kind of reminds me of the Croods a little too much.
That's exactly what I said when they released the trailer.
But the landscaping and the characters are good, don't get me wrong. But the landscaping and the water and the it's all very, very beautiful. I don't think that that style, and I don't even know how to peg that style of music. It's not my favorite. It's not very lyrical, or I know you're going to disagree. It's not very lyrical or singable, memorable, I guess. It's so complicated. And there are portions that aren't. I get you, like the chorus and kind of the refrains, but for the majority, it's like, I don't know. It's that guy that y'all are like infatuated with. He's all right.
No, the music is my favorite part of this. I love it. And
it's catchy. It's like, yeah, this is nice.
But I also think it's really deep. Like some of the lyrics, like see the line where the sky meets the sea, it calls me. And then later she says, and the call isn't out there at all. It's inside me. Like, I love that. Those callbacks.
That has to be the best song in the whole thing. But I thought the one with the crab guy was just a little... It was a little disturbing. I thought, they can get rid of this.
It has to grow on you, because I really like that song now.
I would say that I like the song. The worst one is the rock song.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. And that's just because he's a terrible singer.
I didn't think he was that bad.
You're welcome.
I think the reason they put that song in the credits with Lin-Manuel is because he wrote that song and then heard Dwayne Johnson sing it and was like... we can do better than that. Yeah. So
for
let's try
real.
To sing it. Let's try to show people how it really sounds.
Yeah, and I love the credits version of that.
Hey, my favorite character is the kooky old grandma. I just think I identified with her so much, and then when she died, I was so like emotionally distraught.
Really?
Yeah, that was nice. I think for me, the problems will not be as big of a problem the next time I watch it because I'm used to it, but. Two things for me really didn't work. The chicken was... I hated that character because it was just like a nuisance and did nothing. And then the coconuts. There was just something that was off about the warrior coconuts.
I was just like, why is this happening?
Yeah, it was kind of a distraction from the main story.
That felt like a very universal moment. Those characters did. And they were forgettable and they don't... I think Disney tried to make them happen. Like, I remember seeing, like, them on the commercials and stuff. The trailers and stuff that was on TV. And it didn't come together.
I think that somebody...
They're like the trolls to me. Like, they need to stop trying to make those little side characters happen. Like, just cut that scene, cut the troll scene. And I would have liked both films much better.
Oh, the trolls in Frozen, not the...
Yeah. Sorry.
No, I think somebody could probably write a dissertation on the mentally... handicapped side characters featured in Pixar and Disney films because you had...
Trust me, you give America enough time, we're going to write about mentally handicapped.
No, because you had the chicken in Moana, and then you had, was it Becky in Finding Dory, and the seal was also a little loopy.
It's true.
Clearly yeah. Had something
Just
wrong.
Just give it enough time, somebody will get mad and be mad about it.
I'm just saying it's out there, and perhaps that if you find that offensive, I would like to hear from you and hear your opinion on it.
I would not. Right, Jeremy?
Well, Moana did bring us a lot of good things that I'm glad are part of the Disney company now. Not just the music, but like you said, that beautiful animation. And I've been really looking forward to watching it again. So, you know, if we have any Moana super fans out there, send us your emails. Tell us what it is you love about this film. And we didn't mention it, but Lilo and Stitch brought us Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride, which I absolutely love.
That is a good song. That song is so good that I didn't realize it was like a Disney original song for the longest time. I thought it was an actual like Hawaiian song.
You know, the first time I heard it was at like a chorus concert, and I was playing for another chorus to sing at, and then one of the groups sang it. I'm like, I like this, kind of catchy. It was on a CD I had from the Disney something or another later, and it's like, oh, it's this Lilo and Stitch.
Well, needless to say, Disney has a wonderful, vibrant history with the Polynesian islands, the Polynesian theme, and we wanted to have a little fun breaking some of those down and talking about them, because we really do have a great love for all things Polynesia, especially when you add Disney to the mix. But I think that does it for this week's show. Thank you so much. Mahalo, as they say, for listening. You can always find us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook at Mad Chatters. Send your emails to comments at madchatters.net. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day.
Bye-bye now.